We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Happy Saturday afternoon to you on a cloudy, rain is spitting day here in lovely downtown Austin, Texas. And thanks for joining us for another edition of the Texas Insider Show. I'm Jim Cardle. We're here every Saturday afternoon from 12:30 to 1:30 right here on Talk 1370, The Right Choice. We're high atop the worldwide headquarters over in West Austin. We got Casey Johns taking a break producing the show, and Matt Alvarez behind the glass that you hear during the Austin Public Radio, Austin Public, what is it called, Matt, that you do?
Inside Austin.
Inside Austin show. Pardon me for having a mental block there. But Matt's behind the glass, and we're pleased this week to have Brian Preston joining us again, fresh off his stint at the George P. Bush Land Commission office, where some of you might have seen George P. giving the eulogy down in Houston earlier this week for Ganny and Gampy. As he said, he called his grandparents, George Herbert Walker Bush, his burial we'll get to in a little bit. We also have R.G. Ratcliffe from Texas Monthly joining us, one of the state's premier political reporters and prognosticators. But be sure and check us out every day that you can, anytime you want, how you want, at texasinsider.org. We post about 10 or 15 articles there every day to let you see what the politicians are saying and how they're saying it, just straight from the horse's mouth. We don't do too much opinionating, if at any at all. We know you get enough of that on your own, especially during this holiday season. You may want to take a break from that, and be sure and check us out at Texas Insider for Facebook and Twitter as well. But what a kind of historic week, I think, is a fair analysis to say, with the funeral of George Herbert Walker Bush starting up in Washington, D.C. at Old National Cathedral. I know back in the day that my wife and I lived on Capitol Hill and were cutting our political teeth. Anytime you have a vacation in the nation's capital, or you have guests come to see a national cathedral, one of the premier places to go visit, just a beautiful, beautiful location and the home of all state funerals or eulogy type services like we saw this week. And then, of course, he flew on Air Force One thanks to Donald Trump. I thought it was interesting that former Florida Governor Jeb Bush, there was a tweet or two or a Facebook post or two. I know we forwarded it. Jeb Bush was saying that the Trump administration and President Trump had been more than gracious and bent over backwards to help the entire Bush family with facilities and logistics and doing things like lending Air Force One, which typically is known as Air Force One, the big 747 the president flies in for the final trip of George Herbert Walker Bush back to his adopted home state of Texas. And then that wonderful train ride. If you haven't seen any of it, be sure and check out texasinsider.org and our Facebook page in particular, Texas Insider, because we posted a number of clips, most from the news sources, but a handful from some of you citizens out there. Some people were on the actual train route that went from Houston through Navasota and a couple other teeny tiny little towns on its way to Bryan College Station, where the final interment was. And then I saw a post by the Secret Service yesterday morning at 6 a.m., final post saying the mission had been accomplished, the former president had been laid to rest, and We'll talk about that maybe here in a little bit. But first, I want to go over just a couple things that I saw in the news this week, because that's why you listen. That's why you're either an insider or you're not, as we say. And it kind of is going to segue into visiting with R.G. Radcliffe and Brian Preston here in a little bit, because I saw something the other day from old Scott Rasmussen, the former pollster who sold his polling firm. A lot of folks don't realize that Rasmussen Pollies, Scott Rasmussen, sold a while ago. But Scott still does a lot of publishing. And he had something the other day in his number of the day presented by Ballotpedia. The average American is going to spend $1,007 during the holiday season on gifts. I don't know if I'm going to make that. I don't know if you're going to make that yourself. 53% of people hope to receive clothing and accessories, while 37% mentioned books, movies, and music. Also on the list were electronics at 29%, home decor 23%, jewelry at 22%, and personal care or beauty items and sporting goods were at 18%. So see what you can do. I know a lot of us are conservative-minded when it comes to our own personal pocketbook. $1,007 is the average that Americans are going to spend. And the other day, the Wall Street Journal said that a robust U.S. economy gave millions of shoppers extra impetus to make the annual pilgrimage to stores. The numbers have come in finally on Black Friday, and what is expected, I guess, this year to be the strongest holiday retail season in year. Do you know Thanksgiving shoppers spent $3.7 billion online? That's a 28% from last year, according to estimates of just online purchases. And manufacturing results came out the other day. We saw that in the Austin American Statesman. U.S. manufacturing expanded at its fastest pace in November as orders surged, and a positive sign for domestic economic growth. And the interesting thing about that, did y'all see this week, this darn stock market, I guess, was down about 1,500 points. A lot of my friends in the Wall Street crowd say it's an expected correction almost. We've gone essentially sideways for the year is what the numbers show. No gain, no loss, but just kind of treading water unless you were in and out of various stocks that may have had a gain. Of course, there's always positioning at the end of the year. People are making in their portfolios to cash out at the end of the year. But that was a concern. But then the same people were saying that the economy, based on this manufacturing and domestic production and employment, are also strong. But out of 18 industries that are reported and covered by the Institute for Supply Management, 13 reported growth last month, and that includes computer, electronic products, textiles, food and beverages, transportation, and equipment. So even though you may have seen a little up and down and significant losses this last week in the stock market, a lot of folks are still predicting, including my friend Steve Moore from the formerly of the Wall Street Journal and now with the Heritage Foundation. He was on the show about 3 weeks ago, and he predicts that, as do a lot of economists, that the manufacturing and some of these other indicators are already baked into the cake, that 2019 is going to be another strong year. I know the media will try, and the quote-unquote, as I call them, sock puppet media that seems to have been after Donald Trump for the last 2+ years will continue to try and have you and I believe. Because our mindset, just our simple mindset, means so much. And that's why Donald Trump ran on the campaign, Make America Great Again. Just our mindset and how we feel about ourselves and our job and our country has so much impact on our behavior. But things are still looking fairly decent, I think, for the 2019 year. I also saw that Congress, some of you will have seen, averted a shutdown. They had until midnight tonight to pass a spending bill. The Republicans should be commended. They haven't fully completed the job, but for those of you who know politics, there's these things called continuing resolutions or other budgetary moves where they just punt doing their work on 13 different appropriations bills. Appropriation is a fancy government word for spending, but spending bills on the Department of Commerce, the Department of Energy, the Department of State, Defense. We're seeing here on the tube in the worldwide Talk 1370 headquarters that Donald Trump's confirmed that John Kelly, his chief of staff, is going to be leaving. And another thing, Brian, that you mentioned, up from the great place, Fort Hood's General Milley has been promoted to be the chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, a big thing. I got a note from Roger Williams this morning mentioning that. But all these different departments are supposed to be funded by Congress. They passed 7 of the 13, which is better than they've done in about 10, 12 years. But yet there's still 5 or 6 left, including the big mother of all spending bills, which has to do and includes the border wall. So Congress had until midnight tonight. They couldn't come to their senses this week, and that's somewhat understandable with the George Herbert Walker Bush funeral occupying so much of the nation's time, certainly Congress's time this week, and they passed a 2-week funding bill until December 31st. I mentioned last week we're going to be talking about that. We're sure enough now in the cards. That's, again, like I say, you're an insider. Donald Trump saying he's willing to shut down the government without getting his $5 billion for the border wall. Nancy Pelosi is saying $1.3 billion is what the Democrats are doing or willing to do. And here's Senate Majority Whip John Cornyn, our own senator, who's the number 2 ranked in the Senate, is dismissing Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer's idea for $1.3 billion, saying, quote, "That's unacceptable. I can't imagine the president is going to be willing to accept that." So border funding will still be in the news the next 2 weeks. I also saw, some of you will have seen, that Donald Trump nominated Heather Nauert to replace Nikki Haley as ambassador to the United Nations. I actually used to work with Nikki Haley at the old National Center for Policy Analysis. Yes, and she is an extremely bright professional. She's always been ambitious. She's worked her way up from being on Fox News 2 short years ago to being communications director for Department of Defense, I believe it was, and then for some of the national security in the UN. But she's been nominated to be secretary to the United Nations. And yet William Barr, folks, be ready. This name, get to know the name William Barr, is President Trump's new attorney general nominee to replace Jeff Sessions. William Sessions is the former FBI director. But here's the interesting thing about that. Will Democrats try and obstruct this nominee of William Barr to be attorney general, which has become such a flashpoint lately? Because if they do, just remember that William Barr was attorney general and was approved by a voice vote by the Democrat, then Democrat-controlled U.S. Senate in 1991 when President Herbert Walker Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, was president. And now we'll see if a Democrat led Senate after voice approval in 1991 of William Barr is going to have a different opinion of him today as he's going through confirmation process the next couple months. I saw that Michael McCaul, our local congressman, has transitioned from being chairman of the Homeland Security Committee in the U.S. House, where he was term limited. He's now going to be chairman of the House Foreign Relations Committee. And finally, a thing that was kind of discouraging to me, I had saved a clip from Wednesday where the tobacco company Altria, maker of Marlboros, was said to be exploring getting into the marijuana market. We have talked before about how Michigan became the 11th state in November. They passed a law, a statewide law, that says casual and recreational use of marijuana is legal in Michigan now. We've got 11 states. It's against federal law, but no sooner had the statesman said that they were looking at it on Wednesday that today's paper said cigarette maker Altria buys $1.8 billion stake in Canadian pot producer. I don't know what to think about that, folks. I just hate to see our kids be encouraged to do that type of thing. But RG and Brian, we got 1 or 2 minutes here before the break, and I want to transition into politics because we haven't had enough analysis of the election yet. I want to continue analyzing and talking about that. I think folks are still interested in it. More analysis has been done. And with the strong U.S. economy that we always have been talking about, and especially for Texas, the unemployment numbers came out the other day. Texas is still stuck at the lowest rate ever at 3.7 unemployment, and people are moving here. We know that in Hays County, in Williamson County, in San Antonio to Austin, people really have moved here, and it impacted the election. And I guess we got to be careful what we wish for, RG, because people are moving and they're bringing a little bit different political view and behavior at the voting booth.
Yeah, the demographics show that the majority of the people who are moving here are coming from California. They're also coming from Florida and New York. Mm-hmm. And one of the ironies is going back to Rick Perry and then Greg Abbott has been to attract big businesses like the Toyota headquarters.
Exactly.
And one of the fastest growing cities in America is Frisco, up in that Carrollton Farmers Branch area, or actually Plano area.
You've been reading the Texas Insider. We got our lead story there. The PGA Tour of America is moving to Frisco this week.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, and the thing about it is, it's like Pete Sessions lost his congressional seat up in the northern part of Dallas County. Over southeast Tarrant County has gone very Democratic. State Senator Connie Burton lost her reelection bid there. They lost a county commissioner seat there. They lost a justice of the peace seat in that part of the county. And even when you look at Collin County, you can say, look, it still went Republican, but it didn't go as Republican as it has in the past.
Collin County, for those of us who know, but those who don't, Collin County and Denton County have been the home and the basis of the Tea Party for the last 10 years, a real conservative stronghold.
Well, not only that, but for about 10 years, the margin of victory for Republicans in those two counties was equal to the margin of victory for Democrats in San Antonio and all the counties of South Texas and along the Rio Grande River.
Really?
Yeah.
So the Republicans are in trouble if they can't hold on.
If they can't hold those two counties, they're in deep, deep.
Brian,
that was a polite way of putting it. Yeah.
Brian, what do you think? The strong economy, we've got different demographics in Texas.
Well, you have the different demographics. You also have the Trump effect and the Beto effect. Mm-hmm. And all of these things, I think, are playing into each other. Williamson County, for instance, bright red 9 years ago when I moved back to Texas. Now it's arguably purple, shading blue. Mm-hmm. A lot of that is demographics, folks moving into towns like Round Rock and Cedar Park.
Mm-hmm.
You had the Beto effect. Beto drew younger voters out that hadn't been voting before. A lot of them voted straight ticket in some of these urban centers and also in the ring counties around the urban centers.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that effect. And you have the Trump effect, because Trump in 2016 underperformed compared to Texans, or compared to how Republicans typically perform in Texas. And that has, I think, lowered the tide in a bit for Republicans overall. And as you go into 18, Cruz got 90% of what Trump got in 2016, but 90% of a lower number is a lower number still. And when you had Beto overperform Hillary by 103%, that makes a huge difference.
Yeah. Okay, folks, we're going to have to stop it right there for now and take a commercial break with RG Ratcliffe from Texas Monthly and Brian Preston, Texas political analyst and expert extraordinaire. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about the George Herbert Walker Bush funeral, and we'll get into the details of some of this election analysis right here after a commercial break on the Texas Insider Show. We'll be right back.
Listen to Talk 1370 anytime, anywhere on the radio.com app.
All Oh, good job there, Matt. A little Boston, don't look back. And we are going to be talking about a little bit of looking back with the funeral this week of President Herbert, George Herbert Walker Bush. And appreciate you joining us. Thanks for tuning in this week to the Texas Insider Show. I'm Jim Cardle. We're here every Saturday afternoon from 12:30 to 1:30 right here on the worldwide headquarters Talk 1370 Right Choice channel. We're in the Casey Johns meat locker. It's getting a little cold in here. They got the air conditioner on after the break there, but be sure and check us out on texasinsider.org any day you want. We post about 10 to 15 articles there to keep you on the inside of Texas politics, as well as Facebook and Twitter, where we got about 40,000 followers and growing just at Texas Insider. But we're joined today by two Texas press luminaries. Brian Preston has been with the George P. Bush Communications Department over at the Land Office, former Republican Party official, helped found Hot Air with Michelle Malkin back in the day and been with Breitbart. And, of course, R.G. Ratcliffe, you've been with Texas Monthly for a couple years now, but prior to that, Houston Chronicle for 25 years. And I got to commend you for a great, great story in Texas Monthly's December issue of the power issue. We'll get to in a minute and talk about that. But first, I want to talk about this funeral and the legacy of George Herbert Walker Bush. I did see something the other day that President Barack Obama had a busy schedule. He really dropped everything when the death happened and actually went to visit George Herbert Walker Bush 3 days before he died. And sure enough, the Texas A&M, where the president was buried next to his wife Barbara and daughter the other day, Texas A&M is going to sport a 41 on all their sports equipment for the rest of the sports season. They're playing in the Gator Bowl here on December 31st, but they're going to honor the president with a 41 patch. And George Herbert Walker Bush has taken a love for Texas A&M. And we all watched, I think, this funeral procession this week from Washington, D.C.'s National Cathedral down to Texas A&M via Houston. And it's a different day and age. It's sad to say, but a reality. Brian, I'll start with you. Sure. What do you think? You were involved with the George P. Bush Communications Department. He gave a great speech in Houston as the eulogy the other day. But what's your read on the week?
Well, there's so many things to take away from this week. It's the end of an era in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's the true end of the Reagan-Bush era. First of all, they're both now gone.
Mm-hmm.
President Reagan having passed away in 2004. I was one of the ones who waited in line to see him lying in state in Washington, an eight-hour line all overnight. 104,000 people waited in that line.
Wow.
But now that we've lost George H.W. Bush, who was the vice president and then successor, it's the true end of that era. It's also the end, really, of the Greatest Generation era in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
He was the last of the Greatest Generation to be elected president. And if you look at the totality of his service, you could even call him the greatest of the Greatest Generation.
Mm-hmm. The Greatest Generation being those who served in World War II. Yeah.
Right. They were replaced by the baby boomers when President Bill Clinton was elected. So it's the end of that era. Whether it is the end or the next chapter of the Bush era, we don't know. The Bush dynasty,
mm-hmm.
we don't know. There's only one Bush in office right now.
Mm-hmm.
That is George P. Bush, Texas Land Commissioner.
The
oldest grandson, who was recently reelected on November 6th. And
by the second largest margin after Governor Abbott.
After Governor Abbott.
People should note.
But tellingly, and this doesn't speak to him as much as maybe the change in the state, only by about 10, 11 points. A Bush in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, speaks to where what we've been talking about, which is the trends and where they're moving in Texas. But for this week, one of the things that's comforting, I think, about a moment like this week is we get this rare moment of unity.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are a representative republic, we have a lot of fighting, and that's as it should be. We had a lot of arguments, and we sometimes mistreat our public servants, whatever side you're on, just by saying nasty things about them. But when they pass, we honor them as a way of honoring the mile markers of our own lives.
Brian, I got to cut you off because we got a minute, 30 seconds left before the news. RG, I want to get your thoughts on this week.
Well, just real fast, in the terms of the generational change, one of the things I noted yesterday was it was the very first Pearl Harbor commemorative where no survivor of Pearl Harbor was there.
Really?
Because the survivors who are still alive are too old, too frail to travel.
Oh my gosh.
So that's really, you know, that is really marking the end. So anyway, there we go.
Okay. Matt, did you say 120? Okay, we got RG. Keep going. Not keep 20 going. Seconds whispered in our ear, but 120.
Yeah,
that's fascinating to know that. No more.
That's right.
No more. You know, there'll survivors. Probably never be a Pearl Harbor survivor at the Pearl Harbor ceremony ever again. The you know, the thing about it is, it's like we saw the one interesting thing is for Brian's former boss, but Jeb Bush told me one time that he thought that the Bush most likely to have a future in politics was Jenna Bush.
Really?
Not his own son. So
Jenna, who's now on morning television.
Yes. Yeah. He said she was the smartest member of the family and the most politically motivated. So
really?
Yeah, that was back in 2000. So maybe his opinion of his son's changed.
Okay. So. Well, folks, we'll keep talking about the Bush legacy and again, particularly, RG, you've written this great article about some of the new, I call them unstable libertarian movement in Texas, and what's gone on in the election this year. On the Texas Insider Show, talking politics, keep you on the inside. We'll be right back after the news at the top of the hour. Oh, good job there, Matt Alvarez, behind the glass producing the show. And welcome back, folks, to the Texas Insider Show, this week's edition here on a cloudy, I guess, winter's here day. It's spitting a little bit out there. You're running around getting Christmas shopping done and maybe getting ready to light a fire later this evening. It was a fun-loving 45 degrees on the car when I was driving in today. But appreciate you joining us for this week's edition of the Texas Insider Show. I'm Jim Cardle. We're joined today by Texas Monthly's own R.G. Ratcliffe, who's also been on the Houston Chronicle staff for 25 years covering politics, and Brian Preston affiliating with Texas Insider and giving us some perspective after he's left the George P. Bush General Land Office the other day. And guys, I want to get in. I guess I should say, be sure and check us out at TexasInsider.org. where we post about 10 to 15 articles every day. We got a bunch of stories there on the former President George W. Bush's speech and eulogy to his dad and some of the upcoming stuff for the 2020 election. Former GOP Executive Director Beth Kubriel's given us some analysis on this election cycle. But RG, I'm going to start with you. I've asked Scott Braddock of the Quorum Report last week the same question because – really, you look at, on paper, Texas won. I've never believed it too much, but after the other day in the election, I'm going to, as a conservative, interpret reality and results as what conservatives focus on. And on paper, Texas should be a swing state. We're getting awful darn close after the Beto-mania campaign the other day. We've got 43% of Texas residents are now non-Hispanic white. Only 43%. 39% are Hispanic. 13% are African American, and 5% are Asian Americans. But what I asked last week was, in 2012, Mitt Romney and Ted Cruz, that was the last time Ted Cruz ran 6 years ago. In 2012, Mitt Romney and Ted Cruz won Texas by 16 points. 4 years ago, Greg Abbott beat Wendy Davis for governor by 20 points. 2 years ago, Donald Trump carried Texas by 9 points. And here we've just had Ted Cruz squeak by 2.7%. That makes Donald Trump more popular in Texas than Ted Cruz, which I guess if you're a Republican, you could say is a positive thing that we're going to have John Cornyn and Donald Trump at the top of the ticket if he's more popular than Ted Cruz. But we have seen some real degradation in, or change in the voting pattern is what it be. It is being an ascension of Republicans this last election cycle, degradation of the Republican vote. Talk about what your analysis is and what you're thinking, well, just from the 30,000 foot view.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of this is that, first off, if you took Beto O'Rourke's actual vote and transferred him to the governor's race instead of having Lupe Valdez, Beto's percentage of the election goes from 48% to 46%.
Okay.
You also had 400,000 people who voted for Beto O'Rourke and then turned around and voted for Greg Abbott.
Which is just fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, I would...
400,000 people.
Yeah, and there's no, you know, there's no survey I've seen that gives me a good feel for why, but my guess is that those were probably your George W. Bush-type Republicans and independents who didn't like Donald Trump and didn't like Ted Cruz and were going to send a message in the Senate race but turn around and vote their Republican heart when it got down to the governor's race.
They're Americans that just want a positive message as opposed to an angry message,
right,
probably.
Right. And I mean, you also, you know, to some degree, and when you look back at 2016, you're also talking about people that, I mean, I have a relative who's a real hardcore Republican who just loathes Donald Trump.
Really?
I asked him, you know, in 2016, well, you know, what did you do in the election? And he said, well, can you imagine any set of circumstances under which I would have ever voted for Hillary Clinton? No, I voted for Donald Trump.
The lesser of two evils,
yeah,
yes.
So, but, you know, one of the things that Republicans need to worry about is not that many years ago, if you looked at how people responded on surveys, they were saying like 39% would say they were Republican and 31% would say they were Democrat, mm-hmm, and then the rest would say they were independents. There weren't too many surveys that gave those kind of breakdowns this year, but what I saw this year was 33% Republican, 31% Democrat, and 35% independent. And what happened when the state went from Democrat to Republican was people didn't just, oh, I'm no longer a Democrat, I'm going to be a Republican. They became independents, mm-hmm, and then they became Republicans. And so what you've got now is people leaving the Republican Party, declaring their independence. And if the Republican Party doesn't do something to win them back over, they very well might go Democrat in the future.
Yeah, with the right candidate, which people don't pay enough attention to. Mm-hmm. Candidates themselves make a difference. You mentioned the number 400,000, which is the number of people you said that voted for Ted, for Beto O'Rourke, who was at the top of the mm-hmm ticket, and then went over on the other side and voted for Greg Abbott. Brian, I want to ask you, because I saw some analysis this week. Do you all know that the Greg Abbott campaign, who did, Ted Cruz had no field offices, right, no block walking, get out the vote,
no signs,
statewide effort. You had to pay $25 to get a yard sign for somebody you didn't necessarily even care for, which is the most curious thing I've ever seen in politics. But I had somebody from the Greg Abbott campaign tell me this week that same number, they had identified 400,000 Texans who were going to vote, just like RG said, for Beto O'Rourke and Greg Abbott, and they intentionally did not turn them out in effort to protect Ted Cruz.
That's fascinating, too.
Yes.
The fact that they decided not to turn out their own voters.
Exactly.
To protect Cruz. A lot of this, I think, reflects the weakness of Cruz's run. You mentioned the ground game. You mentioned mm-hmm there's some history there ever since Trump's run 2 years ago. Some folks still have some bad blood with Cruz over that. And let's just give Beto O'Rourke a lot of credit.
He ran
a very good campaign.
Good point.
When you say candidates matter, candidates matter.
Mm-hmm.
And you look down ballot, I'm sorry, Lupe Valdez never had a shot at governor. Miguel Suazo never had a shot at land commissioner. These other folks that were running, especially for statewide on the Democratic side, never had a shot. Beto O'Rourke had a shot, and he almost gave some of these others a shot in mm-hmm some of the other down ballot races. He was a very good candidate who raised $80 million, we learn in the Statesman today, and he turned out new voters, and he ran on a message that was ambiguously apolitical, I will say. You didn't really know, a lot of folks looking at his ads didn't really know which party he was actually in, and that helped him tremendously in a state where you have this shift that you talk about, mm-hmm, RG, where folks have left the Republican Party. They're not sure where they're going. And they see this guy, Beto O'Rourke, who is presenting himself as an apolitical, moderate kind of guy. Now, whether he is that or not is very much up for debate. But that was his message. That was his brand. When the revolution is marketed, you have to have a product. He's a great product. And he deserves credit for that and for the folks that are around him that created those ads.
I want to tell you, one of the things where Beto changed the dynamics of Texas elections totally was that for going back into the 1980s, if a Democrat running for the U.S. Senate in Texas didn't have the blessing of the Senate majority leader or the Senate minority leader, depending on whether the party was in power, that candidate had no money.
Mm-hmm.
And Beto was able to tap into a small donor database through Act Blue that they signed up people to give $10 a month. And suddenly they had this grassroots fundraising effort. And if you look at Act Blue nationally, candidates raised more money through Act Blue than the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee or the Democratic Senatorial Committee raised combined.
Interesting.
So the dynamics of how we fund, or at least how Democrats fund their campaigns, changed dramatically.
Is that an indication in particular with the Democrats of a change in how they're funding or a lack of confidence in Tom Perez and the Democrat National Committee, maybe?
I think there's a change in how they fund.
You do?
You know, I mean, you get a few like Lizzie Pinnell Fletcher down in Houston got the help of the National Party and knocking off Laura Mosier, who was a Bernie person.
Mm-hmm. And then beat John Culberson.
But see, they could have beat Culberson or Sessions in 2016 if they'd actually run candidates against them. But again, they had the financial control so that anyone that ran didn't really have a way of raising money on their own. And you had MJ Hagar, the veteran up in Williamson County, who gave John Carter a run for his money.
Absolutely.
Primarily because she raised money on her own through Act Blue. Now, the National Party gave her a little seed money for the TV commercial or the web commercial that gave her a boost as a veteran. It's sort of interesting. Her main thing was, I'm a veteran, and she lost Fort Hood. But
really, I didn't realize that.
Yes. But, you know, that's the thing. That's the difference, was that if she had relied on the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, she would have gotten $100,000. And as it was, she raised a couple of $1 million and was on TV and became a viable candidate. You know, Hillary Clinton spent $100,000 in Texas in 2016.
That's nothing.
Ted Cruz's Democratic opponent in 2014 got, I believe, $36,000 from the National Party. You know, I mean, what does that do? Pay your phone bill?
It's that. You know, okay, RG, I got to ask you, because this, what you're talking about, Beto O'Rourke raising $80 million, Democrats have to be salivating over the state of Texas now in 2020. We have not seen, you mentioned Hillary Clinton, we have not seen advertising or campaigning, let alone the candidate at all, in presidential campaigns.
Yeah.
What is going to be your forecast? Are we going to see presidential candidates in 2020?
Well, we may. I mean, you know, the last time a Democrat carried Texas was Jimmy Carter.
Yep.
And
way back in 1980.
Way back. And a lot of it has been that, you know, they've always looked at the math and said, we can win without Texas. Now, if Beto runs, you know, I mean, that really puts the idea in place that Texas is in play. Even if he just runs for the U.S. Senate against Cornyn, it puts the idea that Texas is in play. And once, you know, if a Democrat can carry Texas, there's no way a Republican can win nationally. So
you got Florida, truly the definition of a swing state.
Correct.
You got California, you got New York, and you got Texas. And I read this week that those three states make up about 75% of the electoral college.
Yeah.
That is all you need to win. So Texas is, like I say, I think they're going to be coming after Texas. Brian, what do you think?
I think so, too. In fact, I think right now, Beto is the man to beat on the Democratic side in the primary.
Really?
When you look at the bench that the Democrats have, it's not that deep. You have Vice President Joe Biden, who could be picked apart on a lot of foreign policy issues and some other issues. You have Senator Elizabeth Warren, who has issues dogging her. You have other folks out there. What you have in Beto is what the Democrats had similarly with Barack Obama. A younger, telegenic, very charismatic candidate who does not have a record to drag him down.
And I got to mention, folks, go to TexasInsider.org right now where you're going to see Brian Preston's analysis. It's entitled Beto is Democrats' Candidate to Beat in 2020, and here's three reasons why. Exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, and one of those is he did raise $80 million to run in Texas, and he came within a whisker of winning. In
the margin of error of winning is what he was
doing. The polling margin of error, certainly. Now, the question is this a black swan event, or is this really a harbinger of things to come? And I would like your take on that, RG. I mean, how significant is this?
Well, I mean, I've thought that the demographic change, it was going to be something that somewhere around 2030 we'd start seeing. And, you know, and it's always been, the Hispanic vote. But now all of a sudden it's like the Californians moving right. in and bringing their liberalism with them. Just this week, the California Republican Party chairman called his state the canary in the coal mine
sure
for the National Party because they have been making this party smaller and smaller and smaller. You know, it hadn't been Ronald Reagan's big tent. It's been the, okay, we're not going to reach out to Hispanics and we're not going to reach out to people of color. And, you know,
Go ahead.
And you know, the thing about it is Beto really changed the youth vote here. And young people in the future are going to start voting Democratic. There's going to be a couple of elections before they vote consistently, but we're on the move here, and it quite possibly could switch in 2020.
Okay, folks, we got to take a final quick commercial break here on the Talk 1370 Right Choice Texas Insider Show. And when we come back, RG, I want to focus on your most recent Texas Monthly article entitled Pushing the Republican Party into the Arms of God. When we come back and see what the more in-depth Texas Republican Party is going through. We'll be right back after this commercial break, right here on the Texas Insider Show.
Talk 1370, the right choice.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and thanks for joining us for this week's edition of the Texas Insider Show. I'm Jim Cardle. We're here every Saturday afternoon from 12:30 to 1:30 on Talk 1370, The Right Choice. Matt Alvarez getting us back into the show, chasing the clouds away on a cloudy winter fall afternoon. Hope you're enjoying your weekend, doing some Christmas shopping or running around doing some errands, and appreciate you tuning in to the Texas Insider Show. Be sure and check us out at TexasInsider.org, where we post about 10 or 15 articles every day, keeping you on the inside of Texas politics. And check us out on Facebook and Twitter, also at Texas Insider. And I'm going to keep going and drill down a little bit here because this is just fascinating to me. We were talking in the middle of the break with R.G. Ratcliffe from Texas Monthly and Brian Preston, who's hung out his own shingle and working up with us here on the Texas Insider for a little bit after a stint at the George P. Bush Land Commission. But we were talking about the down ballot and how some of the local counties have gone. I've got a Wall Street Journal article from the other day that says 59 judges in Harris County, 59 judges in Harris County went from Republican to Democrat, not to mention the county judge, Ed Emmett, who had won 83% of the vote in Harris County in 2014. It was an absolute slaughter in Harris County. I'm looking at some analysis from Dallas County that says straight party voting was just abysmal for Republicans. There's only two Republican state house members now in Dallas County, Morgan Meyer from Highland Park, and he only won by about 150 or 200 votes. Angie Chin Button wasn't a runaway either. And the analysis says that there are the fewest number of Republicans representing Dallas County in the Texas House of Representatives since 1971. That's pretty absolutely substantial. And R.G. Ratcliffe, I got to say that I've been harping on it, and I'm going to continue to harp on it. The Republicans' messaging, their marketing in Texas has been overtaken by the unstable libertarians, that's my nice way of putting it. And your article here in Texas Monthly that I would commend to anybody and everybody, it's on the shelves right now with a front page or the cover story saying the power issue, where you talk about who runs Texas. And your story here is pushing the Republican Party into the arms of God. What is the Republican Party up to these days?
Well, the article is mostly about a Midland oil man named Tim Dunn, who is a very fundamentalist evangelical Christian. He's a very sincere man. I'm going to say that right off the bat.
Okay.
And but, you know, the thing about it is he wants government to be completely follow biblical law. And that puts him at odds with sort of mainstream Republicans who may be very good Christians, but they may not necessarily want biblical law running the land. And you get this situation where you have the old George W. Bush Republicans, the Ronald Reagan Republicans, who are coming really much more from the business community.
Mm-hmm.
The idea being we want a small, frugal government, but we recognize that there is a necessity for government compared to this kind of libertarian ideology that government is pretty much for building roads and police forces. And so you've got a kind of an internal struggle for the soul of the party going on right now.
I was just putting it gently. I'd say it's close to being a darn civil war.
Yeah.
Not careful.
Yeah. No, I mean, you've got a lot of the social conservatives now are kind of the old Christian coalition revitalized.
Mm-hmm. From the 80s.
And, it's a very, you're right or you're wrong, you're against us or with us kind of ideology. And
it ain't big tent.
It is not big tent. It just doesn't have a whole lot of room in there. And, you know, a lot of where the Republican Party's going to go in the future is going to be whether or not you can find a way to, well, like right now, Greg Abbott has done a very good job of getting at least 40% of the current Hispanic vote to go, mm-hmm, for him. But, you know, when you, a little bit of this is some of the xenophobia, where if you turn your whole party into, we don't want illegal immigration, even a lot of Hispanics would go along with that.
True.
I mean, I think the last time I saw, 37% of the Texas Hispanics wanted to deport undocumented immigrants immediately.
But that doesn't mean you have to be angry and...
And doesn't mean you have to be anti-Mexican-American.
Exactly.
And that's how a lot of it gets interpreted, and that's what turns off minority voters.
You say here in this article, pretty much flat smack in the middle of it, that O'Rourke lost to Cruz by less than 3%. Texas Democrats had their best election in more than two decades. Underfunded, virtually unknown Democrats running for lieutenant governor, attorney general, ag commissioner, all came within 5 percentage points when they were expected to have double-digit losses. Texas Democrats are in a generation that they've been well-positioned for defeat, but after O'Rourke entered the race, the sure-to-be-crowded Democrat presidential primary field is now shaping up. But yet, you talk about, I call them it's a hypocritical stance where you wear religion on your sleeve, but you present the old line, you know, spread the gospel with all your might. And if you have to use words, you know,
yeah,
we have to exhibit some friendliness.
Yeah. Well, one of the things, I mean, you look at one of the things that Tim Dunn's Empower Texans did this year was it sent out letters questioning whether school board presidents were, quote, breaking the law. And one of the examples—
You do a great job covering that in this article.
One of the people I talked to was this Brenham school board president, Natalie Lacey Lang, who's a lifelong Republican. She comes from a Republican town. She's middle class. She has two children. And they send out a letter that says, is Natalie Lacey Lang breaking the law and accusing her of being part of a liberal conspiracy? And so, you know, suddenly she's got to wonder whether her neighbors think she's liberal. She's got to wonder if her neighbors think she's, you know, breaking the law. And it was, you know, frankly, a little humiliating for her.
And RG, I got to cut you off there because your final note there says, Dunn may be, this is what Lacey Lane says, Dunn may be a Christian, but his tactics are very, not very un-Christ-like. And then you ask her one thing to say to Tim Dunn if she could, and her response was, how do you sleep at night? Brian, we got a minute left. What are you thinking on this?
Well, there is a commandment that says don't bear false witness, so that's the first thing you should think about.
Is that not the darn truth?
And politics ain't beanbag. We all know that's contact sport here in Texas, but that doesn't mean you should go around spreading falsehoods. So flip of that, I guess, is Empower Texans didn't have a good night on November 6th.
Mm-hmm. RG, what do you see for this legislative session real quick?
Probably one more failure on school finance and property tax relief.
Mm-hmm. Really? I thought you were going to say school choice for school finance.
Well, if school finance goes down, so does school choice. But I think the outcome of this election sealed the fate of school choice. It's not going to pass.
I do, too.
Yeah.
Okay, folks, R.G. Ratcliffe, we really appreciate you coming in and joining us. Congratulations on your retirement announcement the other day. Be sure,
thank you,
folks, and go buy an issue of this month's Texas Monthly. It's got the cover title of The Power Issue. R.G. Ratcliffe's got a great article in there. Brian Preston, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you all next Saturday afternoon at 12:30 right here on the Texas Insider Show. Have a great weekend.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.